taken more than a year of challenging ACC for an Auckland paraplegic client of it to get the organisation to reinstate her gym membership and agree that she should be entitled to ongoing rehabilitation. Sally Wenley was a 16-year-old Woodford House school student when she sustained a life-altering spinal injury 3 decades ago when her school bus crashed in Hawke's Bay. She's had a lot of assistance from ACC over the years and was grateful for funded gym rehab after she developed shoulder, back and neck strain from using a wheelchair. However, 14 months ago, funding stopped after ACC concluded her repetitive strain injuries had been rehabilitated. Several challenges to the decision were unsuccessful, including mediation, and ended with ACC offering a one-off $1,200 settlement. Ms. Wenley argued that the strain injury was ongoing, and a $20 a week gym membership helped to keep her active and healthy. Shortly after threatening to take the case to the district court, ACC backtracked, and it reinstated the gym membership with the proviso that a GP annually verifies the necessity for it. Although this is a personal story, Sally Wenley says it's representative of so many other people's dealings with ACC. She is the Vice President of Spinal Support, which is based at the Spinal Unit in South Auckland and provides peer support for people living with a spinal cord injury. Sally's with me in the Auckland studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And a good morning also to Rick Ackland, an anaesthetist who's a specialist in pain management and works for both the Auckland and Christchurch spinal rehabilitation units, Ōtara and Burwood. Good morning, Rick. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Catherine.
Sally, you've personally had support from ACC for 3 decades. What's your overview of how that's gone?
I support the ACC Act. I think the ACC Act is a good piece of legislation, and compared to people who have to go underneath the Ministry of Health, I think it works well. However, what is happening is it appears, and actually no, it is fact, that people who work for ACC and make decisions are not doing what the Act says. Their policies are not necessarily aligned with what the legislation is. And being a part of Spinal Support, this peer organisation at the Spinal Unit, we have gatherings around the upper half of the North Island, and these are people with who've got broken necks and broken backs. And the biggest ongoing issue is, how do I deal with ACC? What can I do to get what I need? These people have no desire to have to ask for these things, but because of their disability, they have to. And the quality of life and even being able to live. Sometimes, if ACC makes a decision against them, they're stuck and they're really vulnerable, and it's just wrong.
You've gone all the way, or almost all the way, with this case, and was part of this not just about your personal situation, but because of what you've just said. You wanted to test the way these cases are handled.
Yes, because I have been fortunate enough. I've had a tertiary education and became a journalist and been very independent and spent a lot of time in court. And I want to speak up for a lot of these people who come from different cultures, who English is not a first language, who are nervous. They don't understand legislation. So I thought, right, when ACC assessed me about 6 years ago, for ongoing rehabilitation, I had a neurophysiotherapist, I had 2 occupational therapists, I had 2 spinal injury specialists, including Mr. Ackland, who's sitting here with us. They all said Sally needs to have ongoing rehabilitation, which can be provided in a gym. It's all this equipment that they have. So to stretch my shoulders back and to keep my strength and to prevent or and, well, deter and reduce the pain. I was on so much medication at night. I have to turn a lot in bed. I was on Panadol, Tramadol, diclofenac sodium and gabapentin because of the upper limb pain, because yes, I am leading and continue to a really active life. And so this was like a prescription to do this exercise in a gym. I didn't really want to go to a gym because I've always been, I'm an outdoors person. But I went, and then it was successful. After going for a few months, the pain was reduced. I could sit up straighter. I could sleep better. It was actually quite cathartic. And so for a few years, it was ongoing. And then suddenly ACC said, oh, your rehabilitation is completed, and so we will not continue to fund this.
How did that happen? Did you just get a letter out of the blue?
Yes, I did. And then I said, excuse me, unfortunately my spinal injury is continuing and there's been no divine intervention. So no, and it's only going to get worse because I'm nearly 50 and ageing and using a wheelchair. And they said, well, no, no, we're not going to fund it. So I said, oh, well, I will appeal because it's less than $20 a week. And I've spoken to a lot of other people who use chairs and they say, oh, no, we don't challenge because ACC says no and we don't know what to do. So I thought, right, I'm going to take them on.
Explain how you did, the process you went through. Yes.
So first of all, I go through a case manager and the case managers are generally really good and mine is fantastic. However, they have to refer it to what's called the National Consistency Panel. And so this is a group of alleged clinicians and medical experts and they make a ruling on whether this should continue. So they said, no, your rehabilitation is complete. So I said, no, I will appeal against that. So we went to mediation, and this is an independent legal advisory organisation that has a contract with ACC. So I defended myself and went to this hearing. And during it, on a teleconference with an ACC advisor in Wellington, this person said, ACC does not fund gym memberships. I said, look, I've got no desire to go to a gym, but I'm going there for this ongoing rehab. She said, no, our policy says that we do not fund it. And I said, so I've got a copy of the ACC Act in front of me. Can you show me where in the legislation it says ACC does not fund ongoing rehab? And this person said, I can't. And then they offered me, during this mediation and their submission, a green card. And I said, well, thank you. As much as I'd like to go to the United States and be able to work over there, I don't really feel the need to at the moment. Obviously, what they were meaning was a green prescription, which I researched, and that is for sedentary, potentially overweight people who want to do outdoor activities. So that's not applicable. So the mediation continued, and the ruling was made. It came out a couple of months later in my favour that in the Act, under physical and social rehabilitation, that they turned down ACC panel's ruling. So then ACC said, right, we're going to go back to the panel. And I said, well, did you not listen and read and understand what the mediation independent legal advice said? They said, no, it will go back to our panel. So it went back to the panel, and then a couple of weeks ago, I had a letter from the panel saying, no, we are turning down your gym membership and the mediation, and no, we're not going to fund your gym membership. And they had offered me all this gym equipment in my house, tens of thousands of dollars worth of the exercise equipment that, you know, with the weights, so you can lift your shoulders up, you can go back, you can go forward. I live in a small house and there's no room, and I think I need supervision too because this equipment, I believe you need like people who know what they're doing around. There are personal trainers there. There are physios who work in this gym. So they monitor me and supervise me.
There are spotters if something happens.
Oh, exactly. And so I said, no, we will go to the district court because that's the next process. And by this stage, it would have cost, I think, ACC probably up to $10,000 to challenge me. And I said, right, we'll go to the district court. And then I had a phone call from a senior policy advisor from ACC. This was over a week ago. And I just copied down what this person had said to me. And he said, they have lost sight of the overriding principle of the Act, this ACC review team panel. And I said, yes, that's what I've been trying to tell them. And he said, it would cost us more to go through the review process than pay for your gym fee. And I said, yes, that's what I've already told your panel. And he said, I am bemused. I think they're missing the point that someone who uses ACC and gets value from this gym membership, you know, is benefiting. And he said, they've lost focus of what this is about, and that's meant to be you. And I said, well, you need to make a decision. And that's what I've been saying all along. And it's not just about me. It is about, I'd say, about 40 at least other people around the country who would benefit from this. And what really annoys me is that it's a waste of money to challenge me, and that this enhances my life, makes me independent, makes me active, makes me be able to work and function as an employee, a taxpayer, a mother, a friend, everything.
The psychosocial benefits of going to the gym as well, getting out, being involved, being active, using your body to get around, all of this adds up.
Yes,
to common sense.
It is. You're dead right. And that's under the Act, social rehabilitation. I was really reluctant to go to a gym because I was always a really sporty person, and I thought, oh, they're going to be in their active wear and, you know, in their little makeup and lycra and stuff. But this gym that I go to, it's laid back. They're wonderful people, and now they know me by name. And I look forward to going there and getting physical and feeling good, and my health actually has improved a lot, and my pain medication has virtually disappeared.
And that's $20 a week. 2 points. I want to talk about the National Consistency Panel in a moment. But first, do you believe there was a concern about setting a precedent that if we fund gym memberships for Sally, we're going to fund gym memberships for what you estimate to be the grand total of 40 other people with similar injuries perhaps who might need it? Do you think there's a... they were worried about a precedent.
I believe you're dead right, and that's why I decided to take it on. I found it quite humiliating at times, you know. I felt bad for being disabled. They made me feel not like a real human being. Why did I have to try and justify my disability? And I think of all these other people that spinal support we volunteer to help with around the country, you know, they... it's really difficult for them.
Sally, you've had support with a vehicle that's way more expensive than a gym membership. Others who wrote to you afterwards, when you talked about your experience, talked about the variations again.
Yes.
Under the Act, because we all contribute to this system, people can be in receipt of quite expensive and life-changing supports, as the Act says they ought to be. But there's just this huge range of experiences and difference in experience that people have, right?
Yes, it's huge. If I could say, as you alluded to, ACC has been fantastic for me in some aspects, like modifications for my kitchen so I can host and do some great cooking and have parties and things. And I've got this wonderful ute. They modified it. The modifications cost $60,000 alone, but that means I can get out on the beach, and because I like hunting and fishing, and I can tow my daughter's Sea Scout boat and be part of the community. And that cost them a lot of money, but then they wouldn't pay this less than $20 a week. And so what I did, I thought, yeah, as you alluded to, the inconsistency. Like only a week ago, I flicked out an email to our spinal support members and said, hey, I'm potentially going to be on national radio. What sort of experiences would you all like to talk about? And people don't generally speak up because they might be busy, or they might not be that, they're English, or they're doing other things. So I've just got a few comments. I've just got a whole sheaf of paper here, if you don't mind. It says, here we are, is one. I was worried if I appeal, my case manager would penalise me for any future things I might need, and I felt the fight was washed out of me. And then here's someone else said, I wanted to go to review, but they said it was cheaper to give me the whole gym equipment in my house, which I didn't understand, and so I didn't say anything. And then someone else, he says, we've been ripped off by the panel. They chew up way too much time and money when they get it wrong. Does ACC even tell their panel their decisions have been overturned? I have had a request for replacing my calipers declined. I'm not bothering to review now. And Catherine, it goes on and on. I'm just going through here. It's just really sad. It's just wrong. And what the consensus is from all this feedback is that people feel if they challenge ACC, they're not going to get what they need to be able to live.
They're dependent on it. There's not an alternative ACC they can take their business to, right? Okay. Can we talk about, I want to bring Rick in the moment, and this will be an important part of the conversation, Rick, as well as your expertise on pain management. and the multiplicity of ways it might be achieved. But the existence of the National Consistency Panel is interesting, isn't it? When everyone has their personal situation and what works for them. There's another example of the feedback you got when someone was modifying a vehicle according to their needs, and then their case manager said, no, you're going to get this vehicle modified this way, because for some reason the case manager knew better than the person themselves what worked. Is this another thing, a lack of working with people who have worked out what works for them?
Yes, it is. And the case managers are the ones that don't get to make that decision. What happens is they refer it to a car vehicle specialist, an occupational therapist, a physio. So there's a voluminous number of reports that come back, and that potentially will go to the head office or the panel, and then they give their recommendation to the case manager, who is the person who might actually be really good at their job, who has to tell the client, yeah, that ruling. And as you say, they don't look at the independent person's needs as they're meant to, and as they say on their website and in the Act.
But a National Consistency Review Panel suggests something straight off, isn't it? Person A can't have what we can't or won't or don't give to person B. Whereas what we are talking about here may well be tailored pain management systems of different kinds that doesn't sit with someone with a spreadsheet saying, can't decline this because. That's not personalised, tailored support for someone.
No, and what they do is they go against clinical advice, as I found in others. A specialist physio, two specialist doctors who do spinal injury, a GP, two occupational therapists, they're all in my reports endorsing that I have this, and the panel goes against clinical advice. I'm bemused.
Rick Ackland, thank you, Sally. Stay with us. Rick Ackland, as we said, is an anaesthetist, is a specialist. He specialises in pain management, works both for the Auckland and Christchurch Spinal Rehabilitation Units. Rick, can you talk a little bit more about your career and how you become a specialist in some ways in pain management?
Thank you, Catherine. My career was somewhat unusual. I did 20 years in anaesthesia, always interested in chronic pain. And then I did an almost U-turn into rehabilitation and working in spinal cord injury. So Sally, I've known for a number of years when she first presented when I was on the North Shore with severe pain. They've picked the wrong battle with Sally. And it's sad because Sally is a marvellous example of using pain management strategies to maximise your independence and live a productive life. So I'm sad to see this because ACC is a good process for New Zealand. We're very proud of it when we're on the international conferences that people admire our system. But sadly, this challenging that seems to possibly be on the increase is not right. In other words, the sort of lack of trust.
We've been there before with the work done by the likes of researcher Warren Forster, who interestingly tracked what happened in a variety of different cases when people went to appeal processes. And from memory, the pattern was ACC, at every point, as you said, go to mediation, go to the next step, all the way through till we got to a court case, and then it would settle. The point that you are making is, Sally, that some people have the wherewithal to challenge this. Others who are vulnerable, and anyone who's had a life-altering injury is vulnerable, don't. I am interested in, first, your expertise on the ways that one manages pain. And is it easier for box tickers to go this drug or this piece of equipment in the house than to listen to a tailored and different approach that actually works? Tell us how complicated pain is. Tell us the different ways that you as a therapist work with people on it.
Well, pain is incredibly complex. And of course, in Sally's situation, where she's one of about 4,000 people in New Zealand with spinal cord injury, Pain is probably present in 60% of these people, so it's significant. But chronic pain within New Zealand and the wider population is in excess of 10% of the population, so it's huge. And the ways of managing pain, there's a multitude of ways. The difficult thing about pain is we can't measure it, so we can't suck off a little bit of blood and say, goodness, your pain's 8.9. It's the conversation. And the trouble with conversation is it gets misinterpreted. So we are embracing wider pain management strategies, but these can be expensive and everyone's different. And this is where a single model will not manage chronic pain.
You see, ACC has opened its mind to different therapies. I think even going so far as the likes of acupuncture and so forth. So in theory, it gets it. But in practice, what happens? I mean, how do you sum up what happened in Sally's case? Specialists were saying, do this. Sally was saying, this works. Everyone was saying, this is an ongoing rehabilitation she's going to need.
Mm.
Did it not fall into a technical part of the service? Was it seen as preventative, and somehow that's not ACC's role, rather than a consequence of her accident?
ACC very much is preventative.
Okay, so what happened?
So why do they see attending a gym as a sort of entertainment rather than the role is to prevent further damage? And in Sally's case, I mean, the whole emphasis is to preserve her shoulders, because your shoulder, when you start using a wheelchair, takes on a new role. It's a weight-bearing joint. And so it is just at your young age, Sally, you've got to preserve your shoulders for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And so it's an ongoing process. You can't say it's finished. It's ongoing.
And the psychosocial part of pain, as Sally said, A, she doesn't have room in a house, and B, by going to the gym, you are getting out. You are moving mentally. You are moving attitudinally. And is that also part of managing living with pain?
Absolutely. And of course, now Sally is what we'd say wound up. And this is going to amplify her pain. So it's just the wrong thing. It's sad, this, because...
And the physical pain, the neurological pain... I have found, and I'd say the majority of people I know with spinal injuries, they find that more debilitating than the paralysis. It's exhausting. And it's the mental health as well as the physical.
Tell me, Rick, of your experience of the National Consistency Review Panel.
I have very little experience.
So
have you not had other
cases where people have had to go through the process of understanding why a therapy they had been getting is no longer available? That's not been a big experience for you.
No, it hasn't. And I just want to commend the case management structure of ACC. I think it works generally very well, and they are people who are advocates for the ACC client. And in general, it does work extremely well.
So it's when they go to the next level.
It's a next level.
And then
it becomes... confused.
Yeah, and people don't understand why, and they're left in a very vulnerable situation, and that's just such an ongoing
issue. Is it your understanding that it is a relatively small number of specialists who act or who sit on the ACC review panel?
Well, it's hard to pin down who it is. I think on some there's been... an occupational therapist and physio, and I think internal managers. And I asked for the list of the people and what their qualifications were, but I got a list of names and nothing else, so that does confuse me.
You went to the point of going back to the Act, and in that informal conversation that you had with the manager when they finally got there in the end, they were accepting that they had lost sight of the Act. Right. Why do you believe that happens? Is that a function of bureaucracy? Is it a function of targets We know for a long time ACC was very focused on the long tail of people who had been clients for a long time. As you said, so far no divine intervention on your case, and you are going to be managing this for life. So do you, when you sit back and look at what's happened, do you think other things have got in the way of that fundamental entitlement New Zealanders have to the provision of these services?
Yes, I don't believe that many people who work for ACC actually know what the Act is and what they're meant to be doing under the Act. And that has concerned me so much that I actually went under the Official Information Act to see how much they're spending on these appeals, and it is increasing over the last few years. Just for reviews, that's even before it gets to court. The last year it's been over $14.5 million, and a couple of years ago it was a lot less. So over the last few years it's increased by $3 million. And it makes me think, what's going on here? I know they've got $40 billion that they're managing, the government, you know, with the board, and I feel that they've lost focus. I think they're primarily from finance, economic and investment backgrounds. And so I feel that what's happening is that they're more interested in the dividends from their interest than interested in the claimants who they're meant to be looking after under legislation. So I think that comes from the top. I think it's a board issue. Do they know what is happening? And then is the management not endorsing the Act? And those that are left out are the people they're meant to be caring for.
ACC has declined an interview with 9 to Noon, but provided the following statement. And ACC's Chief Operating Officer Mike Tully says, Sally is a long-term paraplegic client of ACC who has been determined to live life to the full despite her setbacks. We accept our processes have fallen short, and we'd like to apologise to Sally for her experience with ACC. We're committed to learning lessons from this alongside work we already have underway to improve our case management and customer experience.
Were they asked to come on the programme this morning?
Yes, they were.
Well, I'm first of all disappointed that ACC didn't front up, because I think the ACC Act is great and it would have been nice to have somebody there who works for it to be able to endorse it. I am very disappointed that they didn't apologise to me earlier or at any time, and I just like to say it's not just about me, it's about every single person who has a spinal injury in this country. They deserve the respect and acknowledgement from ACC to get what they need. They don't want it. They have to have these things to be able to have a decent quality of life.
Thank you, Sally Winley. Thank you, Rick Ackland. And thank you also to ACC for their statement this morning. We'll leave open that offer. We have time to talk these things through more fully, and they are most welcome to come on and discuss them. Thank you very much.